Scoot sucks at the movies.
We're gonna talk about some movies.
How are your classes?
They're all right. I mean, I have trouble concentrating sometimes.
And what is it that you think about?
I kind of have this one fantasy.
Sexual?
No, not really. It's just this fantasy of me stepping out on stage, and there are all these kids out in the audience chanting my name like I'm a rock star, you know? And so I step up to the mic and I say, "How y'all doing tonight?" And then they start cheering and cheering. "It's great to see all of you. I'm Charlie Bartlett. And if there's one thing I want you to walk away with tonight, it's that the sky is the limit. So for those of you with troubles, for those of you feeling scared or confused or angry, remember, you are not alone." And then they go nuts again.
Charlie, how are you feeling about your father these days? Are you angry that he's gone?
Gas prices.
Excuse me?
I also worry a lot in class about rising gas prices.
Charlie, I'm going to write you a prescription for Ritalin. And what I'd like you to do is start taking the low dose. And if after a few days you feel no side effects, then I would like to see you start taking the higher dose.
So do you think I have ADD or...
We won't know that until the Ritalin helps this concentration problem.
You mean if I take the medicine and it helps me concentrate, we'll know I have ADD?
That's the idea.
Everybody, this is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast for January 3rd, 2012. Happy New Year, 2012. The last year of human existence on planet Earth. That's right. In just 11 months and 3 weeks from now, the reptilian humanoids that live inside of the hollow Earth will return to the surface in crafts that we've always referred to as UFOs, and most people have always assumed came from outer space and not within the hollow Earth, to reclaim the planet that they believe is rightfully theirs after thousands of years of subterranean dwelling, which has produced some horrible reptilian resentments, and plan accordingly. That's what I say. The date, according to the Mayans anyway, is that all this goes down, December 21st, which means, unfortunately, we're not going to get another Christmas, but most of us will have another birthday, if you like a bright side to look at. Anyway, between now and then, plenty to do, especially here with the podcast, including what we're going to do today, which is the second installment of School Sucks at the Movies. And I decided to do this show a little bit differently than I did the first installment. I invited a few listeners on to do a roundtable. The film we're going to discuss is Charlie Bartlett. And I thought this went really well. So when we do this in the future, open invitation. I'll post on Facebook a few days in advance. See the movie. If you're comfortable coming on the show and talking about a movie, great. I think this went well. I look forward to your feedback. So you already heard one short clip from the film. I'll play you the trailer, and then we'll get started. So thanks for listening, and take care.
Mrs. Bartlett, quite frankly, he is one of our brightest boys here at school.
Well, I'm just not sure why he must be expelled.
He's been running a laminating press from inside his dorm room.
You have to admit, they look pretty authentic.
So what now, Mother?
Now we try public school. They didn't give you a locker in the teacher's lounge?
I'm not a teacher.
Sir looked like a teacher.
So, you're the infamous Charlie Bartlett. Is there a private school you haven't been kicked out of?
What's that? Is that a briefcase?
Actually, I believe it's an attaché case.
Now, your mom tells me you don't feel normal.
My family has a psychiatrist on call. How normal can I be?
Charlie, I'm going to write you a prescription for Ritalin.
It is possible for Ritalin to get you pretty high.
You're Charlie Bartlett, right? Do you think there's any way that we could talk?
can't go to my parents. They already think I'm a freak. What's going on? I'm like totally depressed. Feels like a heart attack. I'm gonna work this out.
Everything that I've read, there's not one case of anyone dying of a panic attack. You just tell yourself, in 15 minutes, I'll probably feel fine.
What do I do until then?
Sometimes it feels like a heart attack.
I'll put you on a low dose of Xanax.
And we'll meet next week, same time.
Who is this guy?
Charlie Bartlett.
I can't sleep at all. Anger and aggression. Obsessive behavior.
Are you making any friends at all?
Working on it.
What, is there something wrong with the other bathroom?
How does this work? Do I just talk or...
What if I'm not attracted to girls? Maybe you should,
get breast implants.
I just can't handle this place. Well, duh, dude. This place sucks.
All I hear about these days, Charlie Bartlett told my son this, Charlie Bartlett told my daughter that.
Anton Yelchin, Hope Davis, and Robert Downey Jr.
Charlie, what are you doing this for?
I'm helping these kids. Nobody else is helping them.
Well, thanks for listening, Charlie Bartlett.
There's more to high school than being well-liked.
Like what specifically?
Nothing comes to mind.
All right, so I'm being joined by three listeners, and we are going to do a little roundtable on the film Charlie Bartlett. This is School Sucks at the Movies, Part 2, Charlie Bartlett. So I'll let everyone go around and introduce themselves. First of all, we have Sarah.
Good evening.
So where are you tonight?
I'm outside of Chicago in the western suburbs.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do out there?
I'm a mom of three. Currently unschooling all of them. They just left school a little over a year ago.
Really? And so, what ages were they when they left school?
My oldest was a freshman in high school, and my middle was a fifth grader. He is currently 11. And then my youngest is just 8. She went to kindergarten and part of first grade.
So before we move on, just real quick, what made you decide to do that?
A lot of research, a lot of investigating into the school system, things that I wasn't happy with, which led to eventually listening to your podcast, some things from Stefan Molyneux, and just following a lot of people that had that similar mindset and learning about it. And then I just gave the choice to the children.
Oh, great.
And so they decided to leave.
So that's all going well, I assume?
I think so.
Great.
I do.
All right. So then we also have Evan. Where are you?
I am calling in from Denver, Colorado.
And what do you do out there?
Well, to pay the bills, I'm working at Starbucks. But in my spare time, I am trying to be a writer of some sorts. That's sort of the thing that I'm hooked on at the moment.
So what are your plans? Like, what are you going to start working on?
I'm working on a novel right now. I'm sort of trying to do, I've always had like stories in my head, trying to get them written down and maybe one day, like hopefully within the next year, have something published somewhere. So that's kind of what I'm up to at the moment.
Excellent. And, James, you're down south last I knew?
Yes, I'm still here in Louisiana.
And what are you doing down there?
Currently, I am trying to start a travel business.
That's right.
Yep.
What kind of travel business?
Mostly group travel.
Like a travel agency kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but more independent.
Are you coming back up to Liberty Forum?
Liberty Forum, I don't know if I'll make it this year. I really want to go, but I'm going to try for Pork Fest.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, James and I met at the Liberty Forum. What was that, 2009? No, 2010.
2010.
And they didn't have one last year, but they're starting up again this year. So those are the people who are going to be joining in this roundtable to talk about Charlie Bartlett. So first of all, I should tell you, if you haven't seen this movie and you want to see this movie and you don't like spoilers, I probably would recommend listening to this after. But maybe we can try to make it not too, too bad as far as, I don't really think there's anything that's going to spoil the experience of watching this movie. There's no like twists and turns and surprise endings. So I think it's okay if we talk about it pretty openly, don't you guys?
Yeah, yes, for sure.
I think so. It's not an M. Night Shyamalan film, so no big surprises.
Right, right. So the basic story is there's this boy, Charlie, who comes from a very, very wealthy family. His father is not in the picture. His father is not deceased, but we later figure out where his father is exactly. He's being raised by his mother, who appears to be addicted to prescription pills, and he has more of the role of caretaker in that relationship. He takes care of her. He gets kicked out of private schools one after the other, it seems, and finally his mother decides to put him in public school. He has a real concern with popularity, so he starts looking for ways to get other kids in this school to like him, even though he's clearly an outsider. He's you know, whether it comes from his past experiences, he's much more of an adult in a young person's body, and he starts looking for ways to not only fit in, but like kind of rise to the top of the social scene in this new public school. So some of his attempts to gain popularity land him in trouble, obviously. Or at least bring him to the attention of the school principal, who is constantly being urged by the superintendent of the school, who's not a good guy, to get rid of Charlie. Charlie also starts dating the principal's daughter, who also goes to the school, so that produces some drama later in the film. You guys feel like that's a somewhat good abstract of Charlie Bartlett? I leave anything out?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
So
it's a great explanation.
So what we wanted to talk about most of all is that, you know, sort of the, this is not, like I said, when we were kind of warming up here before we started recording, it's not a great movie as far as movies go, but it has a lot of good messages in it, and I thought some of those would be worth exploring. So who wants to start as far as just general thoughts about the movie, and we'll see where that takes us? I said we'd keep this loose.
I'd be glad to jump in with a couple of thoughts.
Sure.
Initially, my first reaction was, one thing that stood out to me was how mature Charlie was. And it's sort of something that I think a lot about too, raising children, not to infantilize them, but to give them power to, you know, feel like they're whole people, even though they're children. And I feel like he was sort of an adult character in this movie, even though he was in high school. And that his relationship with his mother was more that he was the adult, she was the child sometimes.
You know, it's interesting, too, that he lands himself in trouble everywhere he goes. Like, at the beginning of the movie, we see, what is he doing that gets him kicked out of the private school? He's running
making counterfeit driver's licenses,
yeah,
I believe.
For right. High school kids.
A laminating press.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it seems, even though it's never really explicit, it's certainly implied throughout the first half of the film that the reason why he lands himself in so much trouble is like he's bored with the obvious monotony of these school environments. And that's part of it, the popularity or his
right.
desire to be accepted, not just accepted, but like I said, at the top of the social scene, to be the most popular is also something that's driving a lot of his behavior. Anything else, Sarah? I'm sorry, I kind of jumped in there.
No, that was my initial thought when I watched the movie. So I'm curious to see what else other people think about it.
So,
and I felt that was true about Susan as well.
Absolutely,
the principal's daughter.
The principal's daughter, who Charlie winds up forming a relationship with, spoiler alert, losing his virginity to.
Right.
So, Evan, thoughts on Charlie?
I thought it was just one thing that occurred to me while you were talking is that at the beginning of the film, he's in trouble for essentially counterfeiting or laminating fake driver's licenses. And near the end of the film, we learned that his father is in jail for tax evasion, mm-hmm. I believe. Was that it?
Yes.
So yes. I thought that was sort of an interesting connection there. It's like, you know, his father is essentially doing a little bit of counterfeiting his own with the books. And then mm-hmm. at the beginning of the film, he's maybe, I don't know, copying his father somehow. But I know that it was interesting to watch both Charlie and Susan and how their families were very much alike. Like they both, at the start of the film, they're both coming from families that only have like one half of a parent. Like Charlie's just kind of checked out on antidepressants or just pills. Susan's dad is obviously an alcoholic, and they both families have one parent, Charlie's dad and Susan's mom, who have essentially voluntarily like left the relationship in a sense. Like his dad committed tax evasion, which is something that he knew could get him landed in prison, and Susan's mom had an affair, which, you know, the obvious result of having that discovered is, you know, the family breaking up. So I thought that was really, I don't know, I thought that was really interesting, really powerful that those two people who are going through very similar things kind of came together in the film.
The other common bond that they have, too, is that both of them, I think, are longing for a time, it seems, when their father was something else. Like, obviously, Charlie was probably much happier, and he doesn't even want to talk about his father initially with most people, but he was much happier, obviously, when his father wasn't in jail. And Susan was much happier when her father, she says this, was just a history teacher and not yes. the principal of the school. That's a kind of a similar relationship. Is like they're both kind of looking at their fathers who are trapped in these situations that they can't get out of. Because once we get into talking about Principal Gardner, we see that he's very much in sort of a trap, or, you know, if I might as well just come out and say, a sort of jail himself with mm-hmm. his job. Before we do that, though, James, what did you, anything you want to add about Charlie? Thoughts on Charlie?
Yes. Like in the beginning, or actually he has this recurring dream, and he's talking to, you know, an audience. And it kind of seems like to me that he would be, maybe he would be a motivational speaker, because that's what he's kind of doing.
Yeah.
And it's a recurring dream, so he has it all the time.
And you're talking about, like, if I'm remembering it correctly, at the beginning of the movie, he kind of, like, gets up. They're chanting his name in a crowd of people, and he gets up and he says, I just want you to know everything's going to be okay. It's something like that, right, that he says?
Right.
Something
right.
like
and
that,
actually,
yes.
Actually, throughout the movie, he's kind of mentoring all the students in the high school that go to him.
Yeah, yeah. And that is yes. something that he finds his way into that role of being essentially the school counselor. When he says later on in the film, no one's helping these kids, no one's even listening to these kids, and I'm doing something about that. So he's a very interesting character. Is there, from what we just talked about in the last 5 minutes, anybody have anything else that's worth talking about as far as Charlie's concerned?
Yes, I liked how curious he was. He always had a curiosity about the other people in his life or the other students that he came in contact with, which I think helped him as far as counseling them. He was interested. He cared.
Even when it came to adults, Robert Downey Jr., great in this movie, by the way, as Principal Gardner, when he tries to empathize with Charlie a little bit by revealing he has some problems of his own, you know, Charlie says very sincerely, would you like to talk about it? Now,
right.
we really don't know if he's, like, just being a smartass or not, but it seems, I mean, judging by how Charlie is in the rest of the movie, it seems pretty sincere. People agree?
Yeah. I believed it. I did. I thought it was genuine curiosity. That's what I felt.
I didn't feel like the character of Charlie was, as far as I can remember, I don't feel like he was manipulative at all in that way, where he, you know, wanted people to talk about themselves because he had an ulterior motive. It was always like, something's bothering you. Can I help at all? It was very pure. Like his whole character was very, like, very unafraid to just, like, do whatever he felt and say what he felt. Like when he's telling his therapist about the dreams he's having or the daydreams where he's standing up and addressing the crowd, he like hops up on the couch and he like totally just acts it out for the therapist, like completely just just very free. And I thought that was, I don't know, it just made his whole character, it just made it seem more I don't know the word I'm looking for, just more good, more genuine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the more subtle themes in the film, too, is how adults, and this especially comes through in the area of psychiatry, where Charlie is able, just by getting a copy of the DSM-4, which is what psychologists use to diagnose various mental issues, he can describe the symptoms that the DSM-4 lays out for a certain disorder, and then he can immediately get his family psychiatrist to just prescribe the drugs for that. And I think that that's something that kind of goes, when you look at Charlie's mother, when you look at some of the things that Susan's father, the principal, screws up, like when Charlie is buying her Nicorette gum, but it's in a pharmacy bag, and he immediately assumes that Charlie is selling drugs.
Right.
And then combined with the psychiatry, just like, oh, well, you have problems, take a pill. I mean, it's pretty much, it's almost that explicit in the film where the psychiatrist says, oh, yeah, I understand you have some problems. You should have this pill. And what I think we see and what kind of is woven through the whole film is skipping across the surface of adolescence that adults do. They're just kind of like not really paying attention. So that's even presented in the movie a little bit to the audience, because if we just skip across the surface, if we just look at the most sort of in-your-face aspects of the film, on the surface it seems that Charlie is somebody who is just seeking popularity. But if we look a little bit deeper, you know, and closer, we see that he's somebody who actually has a genuine interest in helping other people. That makes him feel good.
Right.
Yep, that's right.
Yes.
And he asks the students, he talks to them about their problems versus just the psychiatrist just seems to want to write the prescription based on symptoms and doesn't really ask for anything underlying about the problems.
Mm.
Quick fix.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking from personal experience, I was actually quote unquote diagnosed with ADHD and depression in my teens. And, when I was prescribed medication, you know, I talked to a doctor for barely 10 minutes before he, you know, gave me a little piece of paper that my mom took to the pharmacy for me to start taking pills. So it was, I found that to be just an incredibly accurate part of the film.
Yeah. You know, I had one experience with that too, and it was very quick. This was about 10 years ago. And, I was recently out of college. I had like a desk job where I was sitting still all day. So as a result of that, I had put on a bunch of weight, and I started having these like real anxiety symptoms. Now, when I went to the doctor and told him I'm having these anxiety symptoms, you're right. It was like 15 minutes before there was talk of medication, when it's not like, well, you know, do you sit in a desk 8 hours a day? Do you eat Pop-Tarts while you're there? Are you exercising enough? I mean, this was right after 9/11. Is there anything going on in your life that you might be stressed out about? You know, it was none of that. So yeah, I can kind of echo that experience. I had something similar happen to me, Evan, 10 years ago. So that's dealt with, like I said, pretty out in the open in the film though, which I think is good, because I think a lot of people who don't have kids, or like school is a distant memory for them, or they haven't even gotten to this point yet, might not know that that's the kind of how something is called a behavior problem, which is just like the school's measurement of like what's expected, and then it's dealt with in this sort of skipping across the surface way. So,
well, and I'm not sure about this, but from what I understand, sometimes when doctors will prescribe ADHD medication to a child, it's sort of, let's see if this helps. If it helps, then we know that that was the right thing for the child. So I think it's interesting when Charlie actually does take the medicine and he's running all over the place. Crazy. Obviously, Charlie Bartlett didn't need the medication. It didn't calm him down or allow him the ability to sit and concentrate. It actually had the opposite effect on him.
Right. So kids become these guinea pigs, sort of.
Right.
So why don't we go to the accidental antagonist in the film, who I think is perhaps, well, I don't know if he's like, I don't want to say he's the most interesting character, but I thought a lot of things about Principal Gardner raised just as many questions as Charlie's character. Principal Gardner, again, played, I forget his first name. Do any of you guys remember his first name?
Nathan.
Nathan
Gardner.
And he's played by Robert Downey Jr. He's kind of a depressive type. It's put out there pretty early in the film that he has a drinking problem. He becomes, like I was saying, the accidental antagonist just because he's the principal. And Charlie is this intelligent, curious, you know, kid who is self-directed and has his own goals. And there's not much of a place for that in Principal Gardner's school. So why don't we start with James? What did you think of that character, the principal?
He was a good principal, I think, but he didn't have the respect of the kids, and that was clear throughout the movie. And he loved his daughter, but he didn't exactly trust her. So,
sure. Why do you think the kids didn't respect him?
It's a good question.
Because he wasn't that. Was the movie where the Morgan Freeman the movie where he's the hard ass principal?
Yeah, was that Stand By Me.
Lean On Me.
Lean On Me. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
He wasn't that guy.
That's not the movie with the dead body by the train tracks. That's Stand By Me, right?
Right.
There's like three or four movies I confuse, a couple because of themes and a couple because of titles. But he's not that kind of a figure. He's a good principal in the sense that, like, I think, I don't know if we've had this experience in real life, but certainly people watching the movie know what a bad principal is. He's young, he's... What made him good in your eyes as far as like principles are concerned?
I guess he doesn't jump the gun when kids get in trouble. He'll try to work it out or try to give them a chance to work it out. Cause he gave Charlie plenty of chances.
Yeah. And even when, you know, there's the most serious repercussions of what Charlie does, you know, Charlie winds up realizing that he can get his hands on any drug that he wants, and he's going to use these drugs and start prescribing them to the kids in the school. He goes and he describes the symptoms to his on-call family psychologist. He gets a prescription for the drugs and he goes to school and he sells them. He originally starts in kind of a more desperate attempt to get some popularity at his new school to just sell Ritalin at a party so people can get high. But then he actually starts trying to use the drugs for their intended purpose. And, you know, there's a scene where the principal comes to his house after there's some consequence of him doing this. Kid overdoses in a suicide attempt. And the first thing that the principal says, I think it's like, if you can explain what you're doing, you know, like what kind of a thing for you, we don't think about authority figures like, well, tell me why, you know, you're doing this. I'm curious as to what's going on here. That's usually not from what I remember anyway.
Yeah, pretty much all the authority figures that I can think of that I've had in my life, I don't think any one of them ever came to me when I had done something they had objected to and asked me why. It was never help me understand this. And I thought that was a real high point for his character.
And it's sincere too. Like, I mean, certainly a cop will walk up to us with a gun on one hip and a taser on the other and a pepper spray in the belt and say, so what's going on here? But that's not sincere. You know,
right.
that's like the principal has like a sort of what I saw as a sincere inquisitiveness. And, you know, he wants to connect.
He wasn't on a power trip.
Yeah, right. He wants to connect with these kids. And you can see that it kind of pains him that, as James pointed out, he doesn't really have that much respect because he is trying to be the good principal.
His curiosity, again, it comes back to that. You know, he's curious about their motives and what's going on behind what he can see. And he's not on a power trip. I think, you know, it's easy to see that in some authority figures in a school where their job just becomes so overwhelmed by the power that they have that they just, it seems like they're constantly on a power trip. It's just what they do.
Yeah. And it's funny too. It's an interesting, I'm not sure if it was an intentional or not, but I thought there were some interesting symbols how, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Principal Gardner, it's like you can tell how bad he wants to be a human being. It's just like he has a job that won't let
right.
him. You know what I mean? And because yeah. of the power that he has and the things that happens, I mean, towards the end of the movie, we find him with a bottle of whiskey in one hand and a gun in the other.
Right.
And what the real driving force behind the things that the principal has to do throughout the movie, which obviously in the audience, we're rooting for Charlie and you're not going to like a lot of the stuff that happens. You just see like the machinery of education, the education or the government school system rather, where you see this person who wants to empathize and wants to be a human, but his efforts to do that eventually cost him his job.
Right.
You know, because he's seen as not being able to control these kids, where he's like intrigued, and it's very subtle, it's very quiet, but he's like very intrigued by, you know, Charlie and what's going on and the relationship that Charlie has with his daughter. But like I said, yeah, right. he just is in a position where he can't be human because he's a principal.
And I don't think he wants that power either. He doesn't, he feels stuck in that situation.
Mm.
And he's got the superintendent over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, that's like...
I need to be there because they don't respect you, so...
Yes, that's what he says at one mm-hmm. point. The superintendent says, I'm going to come to this assembly and stand next to you because the kids don't respect you.
Right.
Anything else on Principal Gardner?
I'm sorry, go ahead, James.
Just wanted to point out real quick that scene where the Principal Gardner's in front of the students and, you know, and Brett was saying that, that they didn't respect him and then they didn't, and then Principal Gardner says that, you know, they're not too fond of you either, to the superintendent. And then the superintendent said, I forgot what he says, but it was pretty clever what he said.
Something like, you're right. I remember that. It was some, does anyone remember?
I don't.
Oh, well, hold on. Let me see if I can skip to that part in the movie. No, that's going to be, like, while we sit here. I'm just kind of, I got my player open, and I'm just, like, moving it back and forward, but I'm not going to probably find a one-minute part of the movie. But it's something like, they don't need to be fond of me.
Right.
Yeah, that was the general idea, I think.
That's typical. They don't need to like me. They just need to listen to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
This isn't about relationships.
Right.
Evan, did you have one thing you wanted to add?
Yes. There was an interesting point where, I think it's after Charlie's first suspension, where Principal Gardner calls him into his office and essentially says, you know, you're back here now. It's my job. I think, I wrote it down. Where is it? He says to Charlie, I will do my best to help you graduate with what you need to survive in the world. And I felt like that line, it was like such a, like, I felt like both characters knew in that moment that it was, you know, it was nonsense. Like, yeah. That's not true at all. It's, you know, it's just absolute nonsense.
Right.
But I felt like it was a very powerful line because it's sort of, it's nonsense, but I think Nathan believes it, or he wants to believe it very, very badly.
But he doesn't,
yeah.
kind of. And you see that the whole film, he's kind of, you see him dragging his feet through
yes.
the motions of being a principal. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's very just overtly unenthusiastic about everything that he does,
well,
or everything that he has to do.
I wonder if he, you know, the character realizes he doesn't really have the control that the superintendent's so desperately grabbing for. The control over the student body or the children or, you know, and I think that Nathan just knows he doesn't have that. And nobody does. I think he's aware of that.
That's the other thing, too, that, like, the superintendent is, I don't know what the filmmaker's intentions were with this, but the superintendent seems to be intentionally older than Downey's character, who might be in his early to mid-40s. Well, you know, the superintendent is a whole generation
Beyond, where it's about, you know, cracking the whip and getting, you know, asserting your authority. And it kind of almost suggests, or it suggested to me anyway, one of the things that I was thinking about is that, like, if you look at the dynamic between Principal Gardner and the student body, and you just go back, you know, 25 years, that would have been Gardner as a student saying the same thing about somebody like the superintendent. So kind of like knows that the superintendent is just, you know, living in the past and full of BS, and that kind of assertion of authority is not going to get anywhere productive. But what the principal is trying to do or being forced to do to the students is kind of mirrored by what the superintendent is doing to Principal Gardner. And like, there's going to be consequences if you don't do this kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's like at the end, towards the end of the movie too, it's like, you know, when Principal Gardner kind of finally breaks down after one of these meetings with the superintendent, he just goes to one of these protests that the students are having with a blowhorn and says something like, if you don't leave, you're going to be arrested. You know, I'm going to call the police. Like, just kind of.
You've got 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a handful of interesting characters in the film. There's a couple more that I wanted to touch on. Murph, the bully.
Murph that wants to be an actor.
Right.
Or a painter, right? A painter or an actor? I can't remember.
I think an actor.
Yeah.
An actor.
There was a kid on the football team who goes to Charlie with one of his problems,
right.
And he says, I don't want to play football anymore. I want to go to Paris and paint,
That's
but my
right.
father will kill
it's
me.
It's the football.
Yeah.
It's the captain of the team that wants to be a painter. And he can't because his dad wants him to play football. Yes, and then he finds out that Murph has some artistic leanings as well. Interesting.
So obviously Murphy and the principal are also sort of antagonistic towards each other, but one thing they have in common is their reluctance to play their role. Did anyone else notice that?
Definitely. They were both very, and I was very surprised when you kind of get that second side of Murphy. It's like, you know, I don't really like doing this, but it's just sort of like, this is my role that society has chosen for me.
Exactly.
You know,
Think about that.
Like Charlie asked him at one point, you know, why'd you stop doing the school play? And Murphy says, I kept getting my ass kicked by people like me. Like, he just got himself beat up out of what he wanted to do and became, I don't know, became the thing he hated.
I guess he turned out all right. You know, he had the talk with Charlie after he was kidnapped by the other kid. and I guess he just needed someone to point out what he really should be doing and definitely not beating people up.
It seems like that's what a lot of people... And that's kind of like the purpose that Charlie serves in the movie. Like, a lot of people in the movie just need someone to point out, like, or even just ask the question, like, why are you doing this and not this?
Right.
You know, Charlie's original pitch to Murphy in the limousine, where Charlie hires this one boy at school who's, how do we want to describe him? Slow. And Charlie, but he's very large. And Charlie hires him to be like his heavy for the day, to kidnap Murphy and throw him into the back of the limousine so he can talk to him. And Charlie says to Murph, he says, I want to be friends. And Murph says, guys like you and guys like me can't be friends because you take a limo to school and I walk home on the train tracks, you know, that kind of a thing. But there's even like a little disappointment in his voice.
Right.
When he says that, like,
yeah,
you know,
can
why
tell
can't
he's
we
sad
be friends?
About it. It's...
Yeah, so he's just like typecast. I mean, not in the movie, but in the real life of the movie, Murphy is just like typecast by the social environment as the bully. He thinks he's dumb. He's bigger than other kids, and that makes him the bully. Or he was tired of being bullied himself.
And that's almost exactly what happens in high school or in school. Period. You're categorized by the other children. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The social environment of school has ways of just sticking people into groups, sort of like prison does, for no other reason than, you know, the sake of your own survival.
And it's what we do as humans. We categorize things. So sometimes Interesting. I didn't think about that.
What else about Murphy? Anything? He's more of a supporting character, but I thought that there was, like, when he talked, when he was involved, obviously him and Charlie do develop a business relationship that turns into a friendship and a mutual respect. But I thought that, like, even though he wasn't a huge part of the movie, the scenes where he is interacting with Charlie were important and definitely said something.
Yeah, I love those scenes between the two of them because they both obviously, like, the characters had, like, chemistry together, and instead of just being, like, at the beginning, I just thought, well, this guy's going to be the school bully, but he actually opens up and is, like, so much more, at least to Charlie. And I think something you were saying earlier, Brett, about Charlie being somewhat, you know, all he's doing is, like, kind of asking questions and observing. That's sort of a way to, like, help people open up and think about their problems. And he seems to just be playing the role of, like, almost a good therapist is supposed to play, to be, you know, that objective observer who is able to look at you through a lens that isn't so biased.
Right. That's what made him so genuine. Even the very first scene when he gets on the bus and he sits next to Len and he just treats him as he would treat any other person.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And then when everybody gets up and leaves the lunch table, when Charlie sits down and then Len walks up and he just very genuinely acknowledges Len and they have lunch.
Yeah.
And that set the scene. I think that set the precedent that made Charlie so believable as somebody that truly cares and is curious, even though his motives could be questioned because he's, you know, he's giving kids drugs to become popular. So, you know, there's sort of that dual, you know, they're kind of at odds, those two issues. But he's believable because of that, because of those scenes with Len and the bully, Murph.
And Sarah, did you want to touch on what you found interesting about Susan's character and James and Evan? If you want to add to that, you can do that as well, because she's sort of like probably, as far as, you know, the second lead in the film. She's Charlie's romantic interest, and she's the daughter of the principal. So she's like pretty much involved in most of the drama as the film progresses. So do you want to just start, Sarah?
I just liked the relationship that she had with her father. I like when a child's portrayed in a more, I don't want to say adult, but mature, where they're actually taken seriously by the grown-ups. And I think Charlie as well, you know, they were taken seriously by their parents. I think even though Charlie's mother was obviously dealing with her own issues, she treated Charlie very fairly, I thought. And I felt that Susan had that relationship with her father too, which showed why he was more of a fair principal, I think, because of his relationship with his daughter. It wasn't the typical, the dad came home, she's blasting music, she's on the phone. You know, he was respectful of, it seemed like he could relate to her, even though she was a, you know, a teenager daughter. I just like that.
Yeah, and he doesn't really become the more sort of overpowering authority figure type dad until he learns of her, the romantic relationship between her and Charlie.
Right, and it gets challenged. That gets challenged in him. And I think that gets challenged. I mean, I'm a mom, so that gets challenged in parenthood constantly, especially when you're trying to parent in a more, I don't know, liberal way, I suppose, where you're trying to understand your children and let them feel like they're, you know, they're actually people. They can make choices and, you know, so that was interesting to me. And yeah, he struggled with that because then he's kind of put to the test with it. Like, okay, you seem like you're this fair father, understanding, and you have this relationship with your daughter, but now you're being challenged by Charlie.
Right.
So I found that interesting.
Yeah, and like you see him become kind of he kind of backfires on him where he misspeaks and says, "Oh, I bet, you know, he would love to go tell all the kids in school that he got with the principal's daughter.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He let fear take over his better judgment.
Right.
With his daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's like one of those, I don't know if he's drinking at the time or not, but it's certainly one of the more selfish moments in the film. You know, selfish at somebody else's expense moments in the film where he's kind of just, I think he's doing a thing that a lot of parents do a lot of the time when a child becomes involved in a situation and the parent says, how does this affect me or how is this going to make me feel? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And he kind of accidentally just blurts that out to her.
I think he's afraid that.
Yeah.
It's the fear.
Oh yeah, he's obviously afraid in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times when parents do act out badly like that, it's fear.
Mm. Which leads to less obviously rational thinking and doing and saying of things. So.
Right. Yep.
Any other thoughts specifically on Susan?
There was, I did the scene between her and Charlie where they're both in the boys' restroom. I thought that was great simply because she felt like she needed to talk about her dad and everything that she was talking about. It's like the questions that he had to ask her were questions that he needed to ask himself. Like, at one point, you know, she's talking about all these things that's happened with her father, and Charlie's like, Susan, you still haven't told me how you feel about your dad. And he says it, like, very quietly, and it's just sort of like, he's definitely asking her the question, but he's also asking the question of himself. And it's just, I don't know, I thought that was an interesting moment where she could sort of bring out that moment of self-reflection in him, even if it was just sort of accidental.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think there really, you know, aside from this little bit part by the superintendent, there's no, I don't remember anyone in the film who was genuinely unlikable or like they weren't pretty out in the open about, like, even though these are typical roles in a, you know, teens versus authority at school kind of genre. I mean, you want to like almost everybody in the film, right? I mean, the real antagonist who's kind of personified by the superintendent is the system.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
And Charlie's the only one kind of, you know, obviously Susan to a lesser extent, and I think, you know, Murph wants to do it, and Principal Gardner wants to do it, and the other kids wants to do it. It's basically like, what the hell is going, what are we all involved in? What are we doing, you know? Like, why are we just going through these motions? What is there anything else that anybody had that, I mean, obviously I know we've given quite a bit away, but I encourage people to go and see this film. It's really, you know, it has some really, you know, warm parts and some funny parts and so I think some things that would really resonate with people that is, you know, just kind of reflecting on their own experiences in school. It's pretty realistic in that respect.
Right. If only just to see the dancing and the singing.
Yeah, a little. Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a little. It's like I said. I think I've said this several times. It's a little over the top in some respects. Like it doesn't want to take the chance of somebody missing the message. So sometimes it's a little overly explicit,
or it's to be timeless in some way. Because it's really hard to put it in a specific decade or. You know, the only clue was that the student lounge was dedicated to the class of, I don't know, 1983 or something. But it's hard to really pinpoint. And Charlie, and certainly where he lives and the car that his, you know, family drives. And it's hard to pinpoint a time period, too. I wouldn't even say it's specific to 2007.
I think we were also saying we were kind of surprised that this movie was apparently quite a sleeper because I didn't hear about it until maybe a couple of years ago. I've seen it three or four times. James, had you heard about it before I mentioned it?
Yes, I had, and I only heard about it. I was on a website, and this girl, she was like obsessed with the actor. Was it Anton Yelchin?
Yes.
And.
Yes.
And she was showing, like, all the pictures and films he was in. And one of the films she showed, like, was Charlie Bartlett. I said, hey, let me check this out. And I had seen him in Terminator Salvation, I think, but I didn't really remember him. And then I looked at Charlie Bartlett. I was like, oh, okay, that's that kid. And he was also in, was that the new Fright Night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I thought that was interesting too, because like when I watched the movie again, I was like, why is this guy not a huge star? Right. I think he's great in this really movie. And then I realized like he's in all these other movies that I've seen and
I didn't recognize him.
You know, I think that's just kind of speaks to his performance in this movie is very mm-hmm. good and very sincere. But, you know, I said this wasn't a great movie, but I thought some of the technique, which is something that I always used to pay attention to, because I would watch a good technical movie, even if it wasn't, like, great otherwise. I was very interested in the technical aspects of filmmaking, and I'm trying to make some videos now, which are obviously not films, so I'm kind of, like, looking at editing and pacing and those kinds of things. And, you know, this film, it seems to, like, it's not really cohesive. Like, it kind of wanders and maybe is even, like, a little bit choppy. And I was wondering if that was, like, I don't know, and I'm not sure if I can get this question answered or not, but I guess I'm kind of speculating that that was intentional to kind of do the whole teenage mind in school. Did anyone else notice that it kind of was intentionally, it seemed intentionally frantic, like it was sort of all over the place?
Well, that might be due to the fact that I kept having to stop it because my kids needed something.
But, yeah. I have to admit, I watched it the same way.
Sit and just watch a home movie, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I wonder about it. It was obviously one of the more subtle things about it, but I thought the pace of it, while it could have been maybe a little bit more, you know, tight and cohesive, maybe the reason why it does kind of wander like that is, you know, a more subtle message about, you know, that whole, the frustration of that whole experience of being in school and being a teenager. But I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
I thought that was, now that you mentioned it, thinking back, it does feel frantic at times. I felt like there was one part of the movie that I just didn't quite understand. I felt like it was just sort of thrown in there. If you all remember the greatest after school fights thing where they make a DVD and they start selling it, I'm like, when that happened, I was like, I'm not sure what's going on here. And then he ends up in the principal's office, and I'm like, I think that was just a plot device. I'm not sure where that fit into the overall story, but I felt like that was just something they threw in there to, I don't know, get him and Principal Gardner in the same room. Because at that point in the story, he couldn't get in trouble for the drugs, or it would kind of derail things or something.
There were two scenes. One was initially where they were selling the tapes, and then it was sort of thrown in there again later, right before he landed in the principal's office. You're right. And I thought maybe I just missed something, but yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you point that out, because didn't you all feel like that was sort of an out of character?
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you look at the rest of Charlie's character and, like, how we're supposed to feel about him, you know, saying, like, let's... he does it with good intentions to say, Murph, you film yourself beating up all these kids around school, so let's make a DVD and sell it, and we'll give part of the proceeds to the kids. You know, so like, on the surface, it's sincere, but still, it's pretty, like...
Pretty
in your face, kind of like not a good thing to do. And it kind of it is interesting as a plot device too, because it does exactly what Evan said. Is it like, it makes the principal have to act like you're selling a DVD of kids at school getting beaten up,
right?
You know, so it does make him have to do something. But I thought I agree with what you're saying. It was kind of weird. It was kind of out of place.
Charlie does question him. Murph, why do you record these fights? Why do you do that?
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I thought it was a great moment when he asked him, you know, do you ever feel bad about beating these people up?
Right.
And he's like, are you kidding? And then he stops and says, kinda.
Yeah.
It's just what he does.
But even though four of us have talked about the movie for 55 minutes and the movie's only 90 minutes, it's definitely still worth seeing.
you know, it's definitely still worth having all this stuff come to life in that respect. So that being said, I guess we can wrap up there. Does anyone have any final thoughts about anything?
Yeah, I want to just point out how, I mean, how the film makes the similarity between school and prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having the cameras inside of the school.
Mm.
And
yeah, that's a whole other part of it. You're right. Yeah.
And then the one kid that was Susan's friend, he starts the protest. This is a school, not a prison.
Not a prison.
This is a school, not a prison. Yep.
So that's a good point, James, because that's kind of like there's parts of that that are real out in the open, but then there's also the more subtle thing of like that's where Charlie's dad is, right? And there's obviously the relationship between Charlie and his dad. But that, like we spoke about earlier, like Charlie and Susan have this common ground of like both of their dads are trapped in these situations or places where they can't be what Charlie or Susan want each of their dads to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's the subtle aspect of the whole prison thing, and there's the more explicit aspect of the whole prison thing. But that's I can't believe I forgot about it. Thanks for mentioning that, James. That's like, because they come to a point where they want to put up surveillance cameras in the school, and again, Principal Gardner is reluctant about doing it, but he has to do it because that's his role. Anything else?
I just thought it was one thing that I thought about when I was thinking about the movie and then talking about it was that Charlie's almost beating them at their own game in a way. You know, he's in the school, selling the drugs to the students and providing a service and, you know, the school's not. And that it was sort of in their face to deal with him.
Right.
And, you know, he came from a different environment. He came from prep schools. So, you know, he was schooled differently than a lot of the public school kids. I mean, you've discussed that on this show, too, the different lessons that the private school students might get versus public school.
And if we look at his house and the fact that he's being driven around in a Mercedes limousine that there's only like 250 of were ever made in the world, and the interior of his house, how cultured he is, it's kind of also a subtle suggestion that Charlie's been attending these private schools where young people learn to be the managers of society.
Right. And that maybe he's even in a way sort of like political. You know, he wants to be popular. And that was sort of I struggled with that because he was genuine and he seemed curious and he seemed to care. But, you know, that's part of it, too, knowing how people tick and understanding them, motivating them.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't know. That was just, you know, because he was schooled differently, like you said, for the manager position.
Yeah, that's
or the politician.
That he might be essentially in that private school to one day managing these kids in some way or another. And that's an interesting observation. I hadn't thought of that.
Or running for office.
Ugh.
So we kind of, I think we have a consensus here that the protagonists in this film, ultimately, when all is said and done, Charlie, Murph, Susan, and her dad, the principal, and the antagonist is the system and how it kind of like just continues to chug along with most people failing to evaluate it critically and saying like, what is going on here? Why are we doing this? Why are we a part of this? I think that's a question that so many people or the main characters in this film anyway, you know, get tremendous rewards from asking themselves that ultimately.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. That makes that all make sense now to me. Okay. That's
one other thing I should mention. The film has kind of a negative, even though it treats it in a pretty quick way, portrayal of the idea of psychiatry in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like going to see somebody because you're young and you're having a problem.
And obviously, I think that that can be a very positive experience. It just kind of, it does a good job of pointing out some of the things that you should be on the lookout for if you do decide to do that. But I didn't want, you know, people to think that, you know, going and talking to a therapist, that I'm agreeing with the film, what the way that was portrayed in the film, that that's just not a good idea and they're just going to trap you into taking drugs. It's something that, you know, like people can pick their own therapists. And, you know, if, you know, you go and you make a relationship with somebody, like, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, if, you know, a 16 or 17 year old kid has ever thought about doing this, you know, Charlie Bartlett, even though obviously it is fiction, it kind of does put in your mind, some of the things you want to be on the lookout for. But I hope people don't walk away, from the film with the impression that that's like something they shouldn't do if they feel like they need to. So I think that's just something that should be said in the end.
Well, and Charlie's sort of like the therapist versus just the psychiatrist that's writing scripts. Charlie's the talk therapist.
Yeah, and he can only do therapy the way he's seen it done.
Yeah.
You know, which maybe is part of, like, he knows he can sell drugs and make money, but also it seems like he realizes that drugs are part of therapy from his experience with therapists.
Right,
so
right.
That's interesting. So that's 1 hour, guys. I think we could wrap it up there. Does anybody have anything they want to plug?
I wish I had something I could plug, but not right now, Brett. Thank you for the offer.
Hey, Evan, did I see somewhere on your Facebook page that you were part of OnCollege?
I'm not officially associated with it, I guess. I'm not sure, but I'm on their mailing list, and I read their tweets, and I'm definitely avoiding college at the moment, traditional college, so in favor of educating myself. So in a way, yeah, I'm kind of part of it.
I'm all in favor of that. Mm-hmm. I just asked because I'm interviewing Dale Stevens, who is mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what his role there is, but I know he's kind of a major spokesman for OnCollege. He's going to do an interview with me
from
Germany.
That'll be really cool to hear.
Yeah, yes. On Thursday. So that should be out hopefully by this weekend.
Yeah, I believe he's the founder. He started the whole that brand, that movement, as far as
oh,
I know.
Great. Yeah, he got back to me real quick, so he seemed enthusiastic. I always get nervous about, like, when I want to have serious guests. I'm Brett from School Sucks. You know, that's like always something that gives. And because of that, I think there's a lot of people. I've tried saying I'm Brett from edulution.com, but if you type that into the search bar, you get School Sucks. So that little trick doesn't work for too long. So, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, I don't get responses for some of the more serious guests that I'd like to have. But he got right back to me, so that's cool. So that's awesome. It, guys. I really appreciate all of you joining me. And this At the Movies series is something that I'm going to do in the future. So I'll, you know, a few days ahead of time, throw up the title of the movie. And, you know, if any of you want to jump in again, certainly you can be my guest. So
this was very fun. Wonderful. It was very nice to chat with you in person.
Yeah, glad to be on.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
If you want to sing out, sing out. If you wanna be free, be free. There's a million things to be. You know that there are. If you wanna live high, live high. If you wanna live low, live low. There's a million ways to go. You know that there are. You can do what you want. The opportunities are. And if you find the new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo. You see, need to know.